Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, May 6th, 2013. I'm Lee Robartis in the studios. Coming up next, state governments of Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana don't like U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Wolverine plan. Idaho Transportation Department outlines plan to implement 129,000-pound trucks on highways around the state, and Moscow City Council will consider raises for city council members and the mayor tonight. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Whitman County Sheriff's Office reports a 41-year-old Lewiston man was injured from a possible 18-foot fall from the cover of a large storage container at the Port of Wilma today. Paramedics transported Robert C. Richard, who was working at the port, to an area hospital. The Lewiston Tribune website reports Richard may have a broken back and broken wrist. The Associated Press reports officials from Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming say a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service plan to declare wolverines a threatened species throughout the lower 48 should not go through. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Department Director Jeff Hagener told the Associated Press there is no imminent threat to wolverines, and federal officials are cherry-picking studies that support a threatened listing. An unnamed Idaho official told the Associated Press the Fish and Wildlife Service may not be able to help wolverines locally because the threats against the species are global. Right now, there are an estimated 250 to 300 wolverines across the West. They were almost wiped out from the Rocky Mountains and the Sierra Nevada Range in California by unregulated trapping and poisoning in the 1930s. The elusive mammal has made something of a comeback since then, but biologists say melting glaciers can reduce the wolverine's mountain habitat by as much as 60% during the next 80 years. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biologist Sean Sartorius said, "You have a population that is expanding even as it's at risk. That looks strange to a lot of people, but what people miss is listing is about projecting threats in the future." Columbia Grain Incorporated in Portland locked out longshore workers and grain handlers at the Port of Portland Saturday. An expansion of management lockout tactics implemented February 27th at the Port of Vancouver by United Grain. The Columbian newspaper reports Columbia Grain issued a statement Saturday morning saying international longshore and warehouse union workers at the Port of Portland were using what they called inside game tactics, all designed to negatively impact Columbia Grain's operations. The tactics mentioned in the statement included slowdowns, work to rule, and demanding repeated inspections on the same equipment. The company also said, "We have communicated to the ILWU leadership that they need only accept that offer in order to get back to work." Marubeni America Corporation lists Columbia Grain as an affiliate company and says on its website it has 40 subsidiary and affiliated companies in North America, 125 offices worldwide, and access to 450 associated companies worldwide. The website says it is the largest overseas affiliate of the Japanese Marubeni Corporation, and that they ship out of the Port of Portland. International Longshore and Warehouse Union Local 8 President Bruce Holt, who is also a Port of Portland commissioner, told the Columbian newspaper the company hired replacement workers in the fall, which shows they didn't want to reach an agreement. Holt said, "Unfortunately, Marubeni Columbia Grain has done what it's wanted to do all along and locked out local workers who have made this company profitable for decades. Rather than reach a fair agreement, the company has hired an out-of-state strike-breaking firm, attorneys, and a publicist to make allegations against local workers who simply want to do our jobs and support our community. Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter today pardoned two convicted drug traffickers, saying the two are in the process of turning their lives around. The pardons were issued to 57-year-old Robert Thornton, who was convicted of selling cocaine to a detective in Ada County in 1992, and 37-year-old Eric Hinckley, who was convicted of selling methamphetamine to an informant in Idaho Falls in 2002. Thornton had asked for a pardon, saying he had a clean record since 1992. Hinckley, who met with Otter today, promised he will have a drug-free life and will enroll in the Idaho State University Physician's Assistant Program. He earned a bachelor's degree in health science during the last decade. Otter said in a statement, "The state sends people, quote, to prison to be rehabilitated, and we hope to be redeemed as citizens, neighbors, fathers, husbands, and taxpayers. Too often it doesn't work out that way, but for Robert Thornton and Eric Hinckley, it did. I'm proud of them." Idaho Transportation Department spokesperson Jeff Stratton says the agency will have to go through several steps before approving new roads that will allow 129,000-pound trucks. The legislature passed two bills this year that allow the Idaho Transportation Department or local highway districts to approve tandem trucks up to 129,000 pounds on roads around the state. The current limit on most roads around the state, including interstates, is 105,000 pounds. The new rules will not affect the limit for interstates. The measure is expected to mainly affect northern Idaho because a number of major highways in southern Idaho have been operating under a pilot program for the last decade that allows trucks up to 129,000 pounds. Northern Idaho lawmakers and citizens have expressed concern that because the terrain is more varied in northern Idaho, the larger trucks will create more danger here than in southern Idaho, where the designated highways are built over flatter terrain. Stratton told the Lewiston Tribune in an email, "The ITD Board of Directors will likely form a committee next month, which will determine engineering standards for the highways that would have the heavier trucks using them and would come up with ways of implementing public input requirements written into the new laws." He said the committee might include at least two board members, ITD engineers, and safety workers, among others. Stratton said the committee will meet monthly in conjunction with, but independent of, the Transportation Board's regular meeting schedule. The meetings will be open to the public. It's anticipated the committee will make recommendations this summer. The goal is to have rules passed by the Transportation Board to allow for legislative review during the 2014 session. A second bill that passed this year made clear the ITD and local highway districts will have the final authority to allow the larger trucks, depending on which agency has jurisdiction over the roads in question. In a signing statement when Governor Butch Otter signed both bills into law last month, Otter said requests for 129,000-pound loads should be vetted through, quote, a cautious, deliberate, and transparent public process. Otter wrote, "Safety must be the highest priority. The process also must include timely, well-noticed public hearings and notification of adjacent property owners." Washington Governor Jay Inslee recently signed a law allowing underage drinkers to call for medical help without fear of prosecution. The Good Samaritan law was approved last month, 72-24 in the House and 44-3 in the state Senate. The law intends to encourage minors to call 911 if needed during a medical emergency. A similar law was passed for drug overdose cases in 2010. 12 states now have Good Samaritan laws, with Colorado approving the first such law in 2005. Washington State University President Elson Floyd has recommended tuition and fee increases for the 2013 to 2014 school year be no more than 2%. The Board of Regents will act on the recommendation during their May 23rd meeting. If tuition increases by 2%, in-state tuition will increase by $218 to $11,092. Out-of-state tuition would increase by $224 to $11,448. Service and activities fees would increase by $10 to $522. In an online blog, Floyd said these increases will have been the result of a diminished investment by the state legislature. Tuition for resident undergraduates has increased by 75% in just 4 years. The impact on students and their families has been dramatic, and it's time for a change. Moscow city officials have asked residents to wait until irrigation season starts before watering lawns and gardens. Violators will face a $50 fine from the city. A specific start time for this year's irrigation season has not yet been set, but last year the season started in late May. Spokane tribe leaders are deliberating about whether to oust their vice chair for illegally killing two bison and lying to a game officer investigating the incident. Rodney Abrahamson was convicted of 5 misdemeanors after killing 2 bison north of Yellowstone National Park in February. Court records say he lied to Montana wildlife agencies about his identity, claiming to be Nez Perce. The Nez Perce tribe has rights to hunt bison. According to the Spokane tribe's constitution, tribal council members cannot remain on council, quote, if convicted of a felony or of a misdemeanor, unquote, involving dishonesty. The tribe is investigating Abrahamson's actions. The Moscow City Council will be asked to decide on planned cost of living salary adjustments for themselves and the mayor when they meet tonight. The agenda item is scheduled every 2 years, and in this case, the National Cost of Living Index has increased by 4.2% over the past 2 years. The City Council will also hear a Citizen Commission report on the Human Rights Commission from Commission Chair Ken Fonts and Dave Lemitz of the Moscow Police Department. The council will also be asked tonight to act on an owner request to rezone a parcel at 908 White Avenue from medium density residential to residential office. The council will also be asked to vote on a final draft, rather on a final plat development agreement and monumentation agreement for Lot 1, Block 1 of the Parkview Estates Addition subdivision, which is being built by G&G Development, owned by developer Larry Germer. Tonight's Moscow City Council meeting begins at 7 p.m. at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly clear through Wednesday. Low 44 tonight, high 76 tomorrow and Wednesday with a low of 47 Tuesday night. Partly cloudy, low 49 Wednesday night. 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms afternoon on Thursday. Otherwise, mostly sunny, high 75. Currently, we've got fair skies, 78 degrees. Coming up next is Eat the Airwaves, news and opinions from the West Side. And that'll be followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio, and then live in the studios at 7:30, Climate Justice Forum. It's all here on KRFP Moscow. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Lee Robartis. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or go to the Radio Free Moscow website, krfp.org, to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. And thanks to all who bought heroes or helped out with a KRFP hero booth during Renaissance Fair. It was quite profitable for the station to do this, and fun, and it was good to see good eating. So, see you next year for that. This is KRFP Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis. Joe Campbell assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening.